This is a recording of the open meeting held by the Federal Election Commission on November 5, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning, everyone. We'll convene the open meeting session for the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, November 5th, 2009. We'll begin with the correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of the minutes for Thursday, October 8th, 2009, as set forth in agenda document 09-69.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. The first matter is the draft advisory opinion 2009-25, and we have some late submitted documents. Mr. Vice Chairman, do you have a motion on, with
yes,
respect to those?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move to suspend the the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda documents 09-71, 09-71-A, and 09-71-B.
Okay, thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. We'll begin with the draft advisory opinion. Council?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Jennifer Brunner Committee, the principal campaign committee of U.S. Senate candidate Jennifer Brunner, requested an advisory opinion, and you have before you agenda document numbers 09-71, 09-71A, and 09-71B, which provide four possible responses designated as Draft A, Draft B, Draft C, and Draft D. The committee wishes to acquire and use certain assets, including computers and other office equipment purchased by Ms. Brunner's state campaign committee and left in the offices of the former state committee's landlord when the state committee was terminated in reliance on an interpretation of a provision of Ohio law. In lieu of purchasing these assets directly from the now defunct state committee, the committee proposes to acquire the assets from the landlord by paying the fair market value of the assets to between 1 and 3 Section 170C charitable organizations designated by the landlord. The committee asks whether the proposal is permissible under commission regulations. Draft A concludes that the proposal as presented is not permissible under the regulations because it would result in an excessive in-kind contribution, but that the committee may pay the landlord directly for the assets. Draft B concludes that the proposal as presented is permissible under the regulations and no in-kind contribution would result. For different reasons, Draft C also concludes that the proposal as presented is permissible so long as the committee pays the fair market value of the assets to the charities. Draft D concludes that the proposal as presented is impermissible under the regulations because it would result in an impermissible transfer of assets to the committee. We received two comments from the requester, one on Drafts A, B, and C, and one on Draft D. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I would like to take a step here that's a little unusual, and that's to augment our record based upon communications that we've had with counsel for the requester. I believe it's counsel for the requester, counsel for the requester. And we have communications that have occurred, and since we rely on those communications, whether they occur by telephone or email or fax, then I think we need to make those part of the record. In this case, I think they're relevant. So I was wondering if we could begin. I do have a memorandum that I'm looking at that contains some of that. As I understand it, it wasn't necessarily committed to writing at the time, but there's fairly clear understanding of the communication that took place, and so I'd call on Ms. Smith to maybe augment the record as best you can.
I'd be happy to do so, Mr. Chairman. We, as the draft, I believe, reflects, there have been telephone conversations with between commission attorneys and counsel for the requester, Mr. Quinn. I believe they go back to initially June of this year. And I do think that the representations that are made in these various drafts are accurate reflections of representations that counsel for the requester has made to commission attorneys in the various conversations. going back to June.
All right. Now, I did receive a memorandum from someone on staff today that might dispute that, if I'm not mistaken. And I just wondered if there was a concern as to whether or not the staff member made permanent recommend.
Mr. Chairman? I think perhaps you're misunderstanding each other.
I think we might be.
I think so too. I think what Ms. Smith is trying to say is that all of the representations in the draft, including draft D, are based on communications that our staff had with the requester. I think that's.
I think that's right. I mean, I do think maybe. Some questions arise because of the comment that was submitted by the requester's counsel just yesterday that that now disputes some statements that are in the draft.
That's correct.
So.
And so I did want to ask, as I understand it, we did receive some comments from counsel that seemed to be at odds with the communications that were earlier made with counsel, if I understand it correctly.
That's right.
And I was just going to ask you to point those out.
Oh, okay.
So that we have a clear record in that regard.
Well, I think that there are a couple, bear with me as I as I get the what the comments are. I think the statement in the requester's letter dated November 4th that the computers in question here apparently never had been used by the state committee. My understanding of it is that an attorney from our staff was initially told that at the time the state committee went out of business that those computers were still in their unopened boxes, and so I believe that was the basis for some of the representations in draft D. I think there is the other one is with regard to the language in draft D about the state committee leaving the remaining assets behind in the office space that it was renting from Secretary Bruner's husband's law firm. That was also based on a conversation that an attorney in our staff had with the requester's counsel. Again, I think it was in the same conversation back in June that our understanding was that those assets were there. They were on the property that the state committee, I think, as you know, went out of business, and so then when the federal committee came into being, those assets would be available, and that was what gave rise to some of the questions that the requester asked us about entering into this agreement to purchase them.
Okay. The
and I guess in turn gave rise to the question that is before us as to, was it abandoned? Was it intended to be some kind of a gift? Those sorts of issues.
All right. Well, thank you for doing the best you can to bring us current on it. Is there a discussion at this point on the Commissioner McGann?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The request as written, I think, requires some analysis, and there's quite a few moving parts to get to a yes, but I think it is a yes as written. However, I share the chairman's concern implicit in his comments and his questions of counsel, in that given what was actually requested versus how the matter has evolved, coupled with the recently filed comments, it seems like there's a moving target here. And it's less than clear to me that the facts as presented are really the facts. Now, we're supposed to take AOs as presented and not really take discovery and that sort of thing, but there does come a point, I think, where you start scratching your head. And that's what I'm left doing in this case, because you have a state campaign, which, as I understand it, terminated. They had some computers that was going to be left with the landlord, and then the federal campaign was sort of going to inherit that, but they were going to pay a charity. There are a lot of moving parts, and if you connect all those dots, it all connects, I think, that you don't have soft money being used by a federal campaign. There's nothing expressly prohibited in all that, and as far as – and you can see that by the number of drafts, there's several ways to get to yes. Because this is a sort of series of transactions that don't fit neatly into what we think of as ordinary campaign transactions. Doesn't mean it's illegal, but here I think the chairman has put his finger on an important issue, which is it seems that the target is moving, and my sense is although my sense is most of us can get to yes on some set of facts, I don't think the commission as a whole is comfortable giving a yes based upon what we know. So Mr. Chairman, procedurally, I'm not sure at this point there's enough commissioners comfortable with affirmatively voting for or against anything. And my sense is the commission cannot render an opinion on this because there's not a majority of the commission comfortable with giving them an affirmative answer, and anything short of that is it becomes a distinction without a difference whether or not there's, you know, two, three, four that are on the fence or whatnot. Unless there's four saying yes, it ends up devolving into the same result. So my sense is we may be to a point where, although in the abstract I say yes to this. My sense is there's not enough of my colleagues that are there, so it may be better to make a motion to instruct counsel to prepare a letter saying the commission could not render an opinion or something along those lines. I leave it to my colleagues, but I don't want to prolong this with splitting out who's for what draft at this point, because my sense is that we all share the same concern you raised.
Thank you. Any further comment? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I was trying to figure out a way to answer this person's question. Part of the reason that we have so many drafts is that I think different commissioners found different aspects of this more or less troubling. I was very uncomfortable with any analysis that would result in the payment going to the landlord. And I think that the way they structured, they were trying to avoid that because, in my mind, that does raise personal use issues, and I think they recognize that, you know, points to them for that. It's always struck me that this was a very convoluted transaction that they were proposing. And I was hoping that we were going to have counsel available to us over the phone, and maybe we could resolve some of the questions that are outstanding and be in a position to answer the question that way. But, council is not available to talk to us. I mean, obviously, they're not local, so it would have to be by phone. But they communicated with us this morning and said they were not going to be available by phone. So we're not in a position to resolve any outstanding questions. And I do find myself in a situation where I'm just not comfortable voting for something because I'm not entirely sure exactly what all the facts are. I will offer, you know, a little bit of free advice for they're not asking for my legal advice, but I'm going to offer it to them anyway as a way out of this situation if they are seeking one outside of getting an advisory opinion from us. It seems to me that I'm not an expert on Illinois law, but I assume under Illinois law they could take these computer. We're in Illinois, aren't we?
Ohio.
Sorry, the other one's Illinois. My apologies. Under Ohio law, I assume that whoever owns these computers could donate them to a school or some other charitable organization. And clearly, the federal committee doesn't need our permission to go out and buy computers at fair market value. They can go to Best Buy or go online or wherever they want to. That was not an endorsement to Best Buy. Wherever they want to buy their computers, they could buy their computers at fair market value. And at the end of the day, you know, the money or the equivalent resources that were left with the state committee would end up with charity, which appears to be what they're trying to accomplish, and the federal committee would end up with computers. So I think there is a way for them to get to where they want to go without even seeking our advice. And I offer that to them for what it's worth because it does not look like we're going to be able to render an answer to them today.
Thank you for the comment. Commissioner McGann.
I agree that's certainly one way to skin this cat, that to get them where they want to go. Certainly because counsel's not here, we're not drawing any sort of negative inference, but we are left with what we have. And I took that as what your comments are indicating, that we're kind of stuck, and it seems like there had been a little bit of a couple moving targets on the facts. My sense, pure speculation, is this seems more of something that is done for tax purposes than Federal Election Campaign Act purposes. When you see this many transactions and charitable donations and that sort of thing, but that's beyond our jurisdiction and beyond even any sort of that has no place in our analysis. But it's an unorthodox transaction. Doesn't mean it's illegal. And there's more than one way to get them to reach their goal. But here, it's tough. And does that promote a tax support or oppose Best Buy?
It was not intended to do so.
Okay, couldn't resist. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further comment by any other commissioner? Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I share the concerns raised by my colleagues. While I had been prepared to support draft B, I think, and frankly, I think we do take their request or at their word. I don't think we need to delve into a transaction that occurred in the past if they present us with facts. Unfortunately, it appears that the facts have changed. Whether it's, as my colleague said, it's a moving target. So, unfortunately, I think today we have more questions than we had last week, and we don't have an opportunity to resolve them. So, I think the appropriate step for us to take is to not provide an answer on when we don't have the facts that we need to reach a conclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was prepared to originally to support draft B as well. And I think if the facts as presented in that draft were accurate, then I think that unorthodox, yes, but I didn't see anything that necessarily prohibited it. But I would echo the same sentiments that my colleagues have shared about that when there seems to have been, or at least there seems to be some confusion as to what the facts are and the with respect to the information that requester has submitted to counsel's office as this process has moved along. It seems like now there is sufficient confusion about what the actual facts are that it would be premature and probably not advisable at this point to go forward and vote on a draft. And so it sounds like there may be consensus on the commission about where we should move to next.
That makes four commissioners so far. Commissioner Hunter, any comments? I did propose draft D. For my concerns, I was not prepared to go forward from the outset, but I think perhaps the best thing to do at this point is just to advise council that we're not prepared to move further on this and see where that takes us. So would someone like to make a motion to that effect? Mr. Vice Chairman.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. The motion passes 6-0.
Just to clarify, we're instructing council to prepare a letter that the commission was unable to render an opinion, right?
I think
that's how I heard the motion, and that's what I was voting for. Did council understand that way?
That was my understanding.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Commissioner Bowerly?
Thank you. I misspoke just a few minutes ago in case anyone was counting on drafts. The draft that I had planned on supporting was actually draft A, although I can no longer do so given that we don't have the facts in front of us.
Okay, thank you. The next matter will be, thank you, Council. Draft Advisory Opinion 2009-26, Illinois State Representative Elizabeth Colson, Colson for Congress, Colson Campaign Committee. Mr. McGinley is here. How are you, Mr. McGinley? Good morning.
Good, how are you?
Good. Council, we're ready to proceed.
Mr. Chairman, we have agenda documents that were late submitted.
Yes, we do. I apologize. Mr. Vice Chairman, do you have a motion on late submitted documents?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda documents number 09-73, 09-73-A, and 09-73-C.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 0973, 0973A, and 0973C, which replaces agenda document 0973B, respond to a request for advisory opinion filed on behalf of Illinois State Representative Elizabeth Colson, Colson for Congress, and State Representative Colson's State Campaign Committee. Elizabeth Colson is an Illinois State Representative and a federal candidate for the United States House of Representatives in 2010. She plans to sponsor a seniors' fair in her state legislative district and to promote the fair by mailing a postcard to seniors residing in her state district. She also plans to mail a letter to healthcare professionals in her state district describing legislative developments in the Illinois legislature. State Representative Coulson asks whether her state campaign committee or her state office account may pay for these activities. Alternatively, she asks whether her federal committee can pay for them. There are three drafts before you. Drafts A, B, and C. All three drafts conclude that State Representative Colson may use state campaign committee funds or state office holder funds to pay for these activities, but the drafts follow a different approach to this conclusion. Draft B additionally concludes that the funds used to pay for the postcards publicizing the seniors' fair and the healthcare legislative update letter would constitute an in-kind contribution to State Representative Colson's federal campaign committee. The Commission received one comment on the advisory opinion request and none on the advisory opinion drafts. I'll be happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Any comments from commissioners? Well, we have enough drafts out there. There should be some comments. As I understand it, there is a consensus building around one, so perhaps we should maybe move in that direction. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if it would be appropriate, since draft C, which seems to be the document that there seems to be a consensus building around, I was wondering, since this did come out rather late, if it would be appropriate that we inquire of counsel whether or not he's had a chance to read and review that and to make sure that you've actually seen it before you stepped in this room today.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
You would have to have been up most of the night to have got this, but I'm sure you probably were.
It interrupted my World Series viewing, but I was able to take a look at it.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Okay, Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I struggled with this, and I appreciate my colleagues' indulgence as I continued to struggle with this up to about midnight last night. What if we change this word? I came to this with the concern that, while I think of these as two drafts because one of them kind of supersedes an earlier draft, and they take slightly different paths. I think that both drafts are reasonable ways of skinning this cat, to use an expression that one of my colleagues likes. I'm going to support draft C. One of my animating concerns here was that we not put ourselves in a position, and this has come up from time to time in my tenure here, and I've always had this concern, that we not put ourselves in a position to supervise state office holders in the conduct of their official duties. I don't think we can make that our job. What Representative Colson is proposing to do is sort of standard state office holder stuff. And I was concerned that if we went down a different path, we might find ourselves necessarily having to review every constituent mailing that every state office holder sent out once they declared federal candidacy. And, you know, it's not that unusual for us to get a state candidate or a state office holder who then decides to run for federal office. And I just right now we're already inside the window on coordination, but we're obviously in the process of doing a rulemaking on coordination that would expand the kinds of communications that would be covered outside the window. And I think potentially we could have found ourselves in a place where we would literally have to review all the constituent mail that gets sent out by every state office holder who happens to be running for federal office. And I just found that to be an untenable place for us to be. It's not my job to tell state office holders how to do their jobs. The issue that is raised, I mean, both of these opinions sort of ring bells for me in my former lifetime as an ethics person. It seems to me that if an issue is raised by this type of scenario, it is a question of, and I'm not saying that this is raised in this particular circumstance, but in this scenario, then the question is one of whether a state office holder might be using his or her position and resources available to him or her in that position to advance campaign goals rather than official goals. And if that were to be the case, it would fundamentally be a question for state ethics officials rather than for us. It's not really a federal campaign finance issue. I respect the analysis in the other draft, and I think it's well founded, but I couldn't support it because of where I thought it would lead us down the road. And I appreciate my colleagues' indulgence as I try to get the analysis in what has become draft C to a place where I felt that I could support it and now do support it. So that's sort of where I am and how I got there.
Thank you. You did provide us with a cliffhanger.
Yeah, sorry about that. I was really, like, struggling with this up until the last moment.
Yes.
Well, actually not really. I settled it about midnight last night,
heck,
so,
really,
you know, we had all morning.
Poor Mr. McGill here. Where would we like to go at this point? Someone want to make a motion? It's not going to be unanimous, but to move this on. Commissioner Barley, do you have?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will be supporting draft B. I'm not sure. I think there's a group of four who will be supporting draft C, so I'm not sure we need to vote on it, but I'd like to explain my reasoning and why there are certain aspects of C that I'm a bit troubled by and therefore can't sign on to and can't vote for that
Please
draft.
Do.
Both draft B and C conclude that Representative Colson can use her funds from her state campaign or office holder account to fund the activities at issue, but draft B concludes the payment for the postcards and the letter would be an in-kind contribution. And I completely share Commissioner Weintraub's concerns about getting in between the relationship between a state representative and her state constituents. But when that state representative puts on a second hat of being a federal candidate and we find ourselves within the window, I think we have to engage in the coordination analysis. And that regulation, I think, simply doesn't permit us to avoid the situation as presented here. To be clear, all of the drafts conclude that it's fine to spend the state committee funds with respect to hosting the senior fair, And again, we diverged basically on the payment prong of the coordination analysis with respect to the mailers for the fare and the letter as the requesters identified. As I read the payment prong in Section 109.21A1, it says that it's met when the payment is made by someone other than a candidate or authorized committee or political party committee, and none of those are at issue here. And so I think it's met. And this conclusion is consistent with the Commission's analysis in a prior MER 58.15, where the Commission found that communications disseminated by an individual who was concurrently a state office holder and a federal candidate satisfied the payment prong. The Commission later took no further action based on other facts, but the payment prong analysis didn't change. We've had a fairly recent AO that took a slightly different approach with a payment prong and stated that because the candidate and her agents are paying for the communication, the payment prong wasn't met. And while that AO certainly is on the books, and if another fact situation were presented where a state candidate were seeking to retire the debt and we were nowhere near the coordination window, I would of course agree that it would apply to that scenario, but that's not where we are in this request. I'm also and certainly AOs sometimes provide us with reasoning and rationale that we want to extend to other cases. But I can't extend it in this case for a couple of reasons. One is I can't find persuasive the rationale that there's an agency theory when it comes to the payment prong. That word isn't in that section of the statute. And while it's true that any non-human entity has to act through agents, that's not what the agency theory in AO in the AO in 2007-01 actually does. Instead, it transformed a state candidate campaign committee into the agent of the federal office holder and her federal campaign for purposes of federal law. So I'm uncomfortable extending that rationale to to this particular case. I worry that the implications of the agency theory as extended in this case could have the effect of nullifying by AO part of our coordination rule, and so I'm not able to go there today. So as I noted, I think all three prongs of the coordination analysis are met with respect to the postcards for the senior fair and the legislative update letter. But because both the state committee and the state, as I understand it, and this is with respect to federal law and not opining on what those entities might be under state law or what may be permissible under state law with respect to those funds, I believe that it appears they could both make contributions to the federal campaign. And so those in-kind contributions in the form of the coordinated communications pursuant to limits, of course, and appropriate funds would be permissible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I share those views. Do we want to discuss it further? Mr. McGinley, you're here, but I think the votes are there for C. So I had a justice tell me one time when he said, when we understand your position, Mr. Walther, stop. So, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I respect my colleague's point of view on this, and I just wanted to clarify one point, because there was a reference to an earlier MER, which I actually voted for, so I feel the need to explain myself, because I never did issue a statement in that MER and probably should. It was a very odd procedural history, because when it first came forward, that was a time when we had only five commissioners, and two commissioners in a very odd alignment. Commissioner Von Spakovsky and I agreed that we should have dismissed
that. That's odd right from the get-go.
That was pretty odd to begin with, but you know, strange things happen sometimes. Commissioner Von Spakovsky and I thought that we should have dismissed that case at the outset on prosecutorial discretion because it involved a state office holder pursuing state office holder duties, and neither one of us really wanted to go there. Our three colleagues, and I can't remember who was the chairman at the time, so I'll just call them all commissioner, Commissioner Walther, Commissioner Mason, and Commissioner Lenhard wanted to open an investigation. And after we voted 2-3 or 3-2, I never know which vote is supposed to come first, not to dismiss on prosecutorial discretion, I felt uncomfortable with only five commissioners on the commission blocking an investigation that the majority of the commission, such as it was then, wanted to pursue, I didn't want to block that on two votes. I didn't feel good about that. So I gave them the vote to open the investigation to satisfy themselves on what had happened here. In that case, although I never really was comfortable, for the same reasons that I'm not comfortable today, with our going forward in that case. In the end, we didn't end up doing anything, although I didn't actually agree with the rationale in the end point either, but it got to the result that I was seeking in the beginning. So it was a very tortured procedural history, particularly for me, but since it came up and it was mentioned and I never did write a statement, I felt the need to explain that I was against it before I was for it, and therefore it's sort of consistent with what I'm doing today.
Thank you very much for that explanation.
No one besides me understood what I just said. I recognize that.
And that was Aaron. I didn't understand it all the time either. Are we prepared for motion? Mr. Vice Chairman.
I'll be happy to move it. I move approval of of advisory opinion 2009-26 as set forth in agenda document 09-73-C.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excuse me. I said aye by mistake. All in favor again?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Opposed. I'm opposed as well. Do you need to recite that, Commissioner Weintraub, the Vice Chairman, Commissioner Hunter, Commissioner McGowan were in favor, Commissioner Bowerly and I opposed. Thank you, Mr. McGinley. Sorry to put you through the ringer, but it's nice to have you here.
Mr. Chairman, it could be 9-2 if you count all the votes.
Pardon me?
Well, if it's 4-2 and then 5-1, it'd be 9.
Do you want me to subtract the first? Because we admitted we're not all great on math. Commissioner Weintraub.
I just want to clarify that. I assume that included within the Vice Chairman's motion was authorization for counsel to do technical amendments. I think there may be a few stray quotation marks around the term seniors fair that we wanted to get rid of. I forgot to mention that before.
That should be assumed to be incorporated within the motion.
Okay.
Great, thanks.
Next item is the issue of placing the first general counsel reports on the public record. We have a late submitted document. We have agenda document 0972, which was submitted by the Office of General Counsel, and we have agenda document 0972A submitted late. And we have a motion, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda documents 09-72 and 09-72-A.
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Council, we're prepared to have you address that. I suppose we'll start with your 0972.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nearly 3 years ago, the agency internally initiated a practice of not placing on the public record First General Counsel's reports in closed enforcement matters. As part of this change, OGC began to submit proposed factual and legal analyses to the Commission in all enforcement matters, not just those in which it recommended reason to believe. And those factual and legal analyses have been released when the case closed in lieu of the first GC. The Commission did this for a number of reasons, including a desire to forestall potentially troublesome redaction issues in pre-decisional documents, a desire to emphasize to the public the position of the Commission as reflected in Commission-approved factual and legal analyses, and to allow for more candid analysis by the General Counsel. After nearly 3 years of experience with this practice, we recommend that the Commission return to the prior practice of placing First General Counsel's reports on the public record. Doing so will promote transparency both about the Commission's own operations and the actions of the political actors who are respondents in enforcement matters. We believe it will promote compliance by giving campaign finance practitioners the fullest possible education about the development of the law, and it will enable us to put the fullest possible record out as swiftly as possible in the circumstances of a particular case. Returning to the prior practice, not without its costs. We would think the reasons that the prior practice was adopted are ones that are in the main valid ones. It's not that those are wrong, but we have concluded that in our judgment, based on our experience, and it's more fully set forth in the memo, the transparency benefits of returning to the prior practice considerably outweigh the continued validity of the reasons for the change we made in January 2007. And so we recommend in this document that the commission return to its prior practice of placing First General Counsel's reports on the public record, subject as always in our public record practice to appropriate redactions. And I would point out that while not part of the formal recommendation, we did note in the text of this document that it would be our intention to go back and, as resources are available, place on the public record First General Counsel's reports that have been withheld pursuant to this practice from January 2007 to the present. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Further comment on either or both of those documents? Commissioner McGann.
Let me say at the threshold, Mr. Chairman, I understand that we're not actually going to vote today on this. We three of us had put a document on the agenda, submitted late. The agenda, I didn't frankly realize this was going to be on the agenda this week, so this has all been sort of a last-minute thing, but I don't want to force a vote on something we're not all are ready to go because, well, they haven't had a lot of time to be ready to go. That being said, I think it's very important for us to continue down the path that we have gone down in so many other ways, which is increasing transparency and letting the public in more to how the commission functions. This is another step down that road. The commission has functioned under an interim policy since 2003, and at the time it was represented to the public that there would be a more permanent policy in place. But the interim policy has been in place since, and not a bad policy, but it's over time, I think you learn lessons. And then there was a change, as Mr. Calvert noted, a few years ago. I hope that by the next open meeting, we can be prepared to move this, and hopefully we can have a vote at that time. But I think it is very important. My sense is that this is something many of us support, and I would say all, but I want to include, this is a staff recommendation, but many is sort of, I see the more inclusive term. But I think it is very important for the reasons that Mr. Calvert outlined, and also it gives those who practice in this area, those who study in this area, I think, more information and more of a sense as to what the commission adopted versus what the commission rejected. And I think in particularly in the enforcement matters, the more information that the public has, the more it ultimately helps with compliance, because it puts more of a fine point on the thinking of the commission. And at the end of the day, I think that's in everyone's interest. But ultimately, I intend to support the notion, and we have our own proposal, which is essentially a slightly scaled down version of council's recommendation. And those are details that I know some wish to reflect on more, and that's of course reasonable. But I just hope we can vote on this at the next meeting, Mr. Chairman.
We'll sure be on the agenda, and I'm sure we can, and thank you. I share the same view that it's whenever we can, we should maximize our own transparency. We ask others to do the same, and we should try and do that to the maximum extent possible. This moves us more in that direction, and I think it's a good move, regardless of how we finally wordsmith the policy. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there is unanimous agreement on the commission that we want to put the First General Counsel's reports back on the public record. We were not trying to hide anything when we change the policy. We're actually trying to add clarity. I think it arose in a case where the commission adopted the council's recommendation, but on a different legal theory, and there was some concern that this was just going to confuse the public as to what the legal theory actually was. Seemed like a good idea at the time, but and there have been, you know, maybe one or two kind of outlier cases that have informed the policy over the more recent policy over the last few years. But I think one of the lessons from this is that outliers don't make good law, that we shouldn't make general policy based on unusual cases. And as I said, I think everybody agrees that we need to put the first general counsel's reports back on. I had thought that there was perhaps one paragraph that was that there was not consensus behind in the council's memorandum, and I was going to offer to adopt that with that one paragraph withdrawn. It's my understanding that the proposal that my colleagues have submitted may be a little bit different than that. They didn't realize it was going to be on the agenda. I didn't realize they were working on their own version of the policy. As I said earlier, I was working on the AOs until midnight last night, so I just haven't had a chance to go through and figure out what's in the more recent proposal that is different from the original proposal. I don't think it's very different, but I think there may be some aspects that I just want to make sure I understand what we're voting on. But as I said, I wanted to emphasize that I think everybody's on board with the general principle that we want to release the general counsel's reports on the public record, and as soon as we figure out the exact words that would reflect that in the policy, which certainly should be accomplishable, if that's a word, by the next meeting, I think we can do that.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make clear my comments, and I don't think that you came across this way, but I just want to make sure. But just merely because this was put on the agenda rather recently, I nonetheless still want to thank the chair for his leadership on this. Sometimes you have to put things on the agenda to force the issue because we're working on other things and that kind of thing. So I want to make it clear that I'm not saying that this was not this is something that's been coming for a long time, and I appreciate the chairman sticking this on the agenda to essentially force it, move it along, because otherwise it would easily sort of get lost in the shuffle of AOs and MERS and everything else. So I want to thank the chair for that.
We have a lot of shuffling.
I didn't want anyone to take anything from my comments other than that. And I think we're all moving the same direction on this and can get this actually done. And it really is because you've put it on the agenda, it brings it to a head. So I want to just thank you for that, and I yield back.
Further comment? Well, we'll consider this ripe for consideration of the next open session and move on to the next matter. This matter is a continuation of Website and Internet Communication Improvement Initiative. I thought it would be helpful to have this at an open session. It's an update on where we've been with that initiative. We had 2 days of hearings and much comment that we received, over 250 comments on how we could improve our website. And our staff has been working diligently and sometimes feverishly to work through that, trying to figure out with our own staff, with our own resources, how we can take some of these helpful recommendations into consideration and how to implement those that are low-hanging fruit, as is popular to say around here, or what takes some more planning. So there's a number of people who deserve a lot of credit for this. And, of course, Bob Biersack and Alec Palmer are among those. I think Patricia Young, throughout this agency, people who are involved in information, Art Forrester, those that really have been anxious to see how can we make this better so that anybody can get on our website without having to be the lady, as we learned yesterday, without having to be an expert, and really understand how to get into finance, campaign finance law, where we go, how to get the numbers so that they're understandable, and how to download things so that they're respectable when they look and they're trying to print it out. We've learned an awful lot, and so this is a quick update. There is a document that was made public today and it will be on our website that represents the work of our staff so far on where we're going. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Biersack for a short update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really, just very quickly, it is an effort to synthesize the comments that we got in those 2 days of hearings and to give people a sense for how we're moving forward in trying to address all of those. I think of them as grouping in a couple of different ways, one of which you mentioned the kind of retail presentation of material on the website and how people can get to that. That involves changing the language, examining the way we've described things and presented things in the past, and the navigation tools that are available. Those kinds of efforts are underway, and we'll see some progress very quickly, I think, in a couple of those. We've had some very good, useful meetings with staff from around the building in terms of the language that we use and changes that we might make, and I think we'll be ready to bring some of those forward very quickly. Also, the general presentations that we make, designing appropriate pages with the right tools for the different kinds of audiences, we're moving forward with that, and I look forward to good progress there. And navigation in general, those kinds of things in the kind of retail presentation. And there are some very fairly specific examples in the document with some time frames associated with those. Another is the kind of wholesale presentation of the material so that other people can take it and put it in their computers, use it as they will. We're focused on a number of efforts there, some of which we've already made progress on. We've created this new data catalog that's been available now for a couple of weeks and has been received nicely by the community.
Do you want to describe that briefly for?
It's a presentation of large blocks of material data that we make available now in different formats, so that different kinds of computer programs can use them most effectively, so that they can receive updates automatically, so that the computers can talk to each other as opposed to requiring a whole lot of human labor in between. It's one of the things that a number of the commenters suggested strongly that we should pursue. And it's consistent with changes that a lot of other government agencies have made at the same time. And so we have a catalog. We're going to expand that regularly. While we've said that we've put in a date in that section of the document that suggests that we're finished, of course, none of these things are really ever finished. What we've done is we've created the template, and now we're going to fill it with as much information as we can over time. And so there'll be constant progress there as well. Programs that will allow people to use, they're called APIs, where the computer really can directly come in and get information from us. Those are also under development now, and we expect to see some of those even before the end of the year. So we're looking forward to that as well. But that's a little bit removed from the audience in general. It's something that computer people understand not so much and will take real benefit from. And allow other organizations to receive the information quickly, present it in the ways that they choose to present it. More flexibility, lots of innovation that we'll see that way. So we're looking forward to that, too. In the area of legal research, there are lots of efforts underway to expand the materials that are available on the website. MERS that are older, where we didn't have digitized information before, we've undertaken an effort to get that in a computerized form, and that'll be available before the end of the year with a nice searching capability on the front of that as we move toward integrating all of those old cases in with the material that we have from more recent closed enforcement actions. Similarly, in the context of advisory opinions, more background information, requests, and other kinds of material that we hadn't made available from earlier years, we're working on that. A regulations database that will allow people to more flexibly search through the information in rulemaking processes that we've undertaken over time. That was something else that people emphasized and that we're working on now. Additionally, we're drafting a document that will come to you shortly that talks about web governance, how within the organization we should manage this process. We heard a lot from people the last day of the hearing. It was very helpful in terms of our own focus on this as a unique kind of project and how we might organize ourselves to better take advantage of that. And so we've thought about that and worked on it, and we'll be interested in having your input in that process as well. I'm sort of wistfully reminded of one comment that we heard from Commissioner Toner, who suggested that maybe we should pick two or three things and focus on those. While that would be nice, it's just not practical in many respects to do this kind of work that way. All of these things are so interconnected, and there's a short-term and a long-term implication to lots of what we do here. And so we're trying to manage all of these balls that are in fact in the air in a way that makes the most sense, but also allows us to make progress sort of generally on in a broad brush over time. We'll be successful, hopefully, much of the time. There'll be things that we fall short on, I'm sure. But this gives us an opportunity to lay out for people what we think we heard, and how we're addressing it, and with some accountability associated with that. We've got a path we need to follow, and we've laid it out, hopefully, so that people can check up on us.
Thank you. Well, that report does show the areas which you're considering and working on now. Talks about how they integrate with some of the suggestions that were made, and also does have some expected dates for completion, which I think is good to keep us all moving in the same direction and reasonably in sync. But again, thank you very much, and all the other staff that have been working on this. At this time, we will go back into closed session, executive session, for another matter. Are there any matters left, management or administrative matters at this point?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The open session is adjourned. We'll take 5 minutes and we'll come back to executive session.